Blog Talk Radio. Better Love. You're listening to Truth to Power. My name is Beverly D, and we have Eddie Rodriguez on. You know, we are live, and so I'm having a little technical difficulty. So we're going to talk to Eddie Rodriguez for a minute till I get this straightened out. And for those of you that's not familiar with Eddie Rodriguez, he is the CEO of Eddie Rodriguez Entertainment. He is an artist manager. He has artist management. He is a he books artists. He is a music consultant, and he has been in the business for over 30 years. So I would consider him an expert in this field here. How are you doing, Eddie Rodriguez? Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. I told you we're having some tech. Hold on. Okay, now we can hear you, Eddie. Eddie Rodriguez?
Yes, I'm here, Beverly. Can you hear me fine? Okay?
Yes, yes, real good.
Okay, great. Well, good evening, Beverly. Thank you once again for inviting me back to your wonderful program on Thursday nights at 9 to 11 p.m. Truth to Power with Beverly D. It's an honor to be on with you again to talk about the story that I want to tell, a journey of growing up. I'm calling it from the South Bronx to the South of France tale. The music that we're playing right now is the music from the 60s that influenced me to become a professional in the Latin music industry in my 20s. Music that I was influenced by from the 50s to the 60s and into the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and now to the 2020s, the danceable Latin music. All of it started back in the 50s pretty much. Even before that, Groucho Marx, I used to do movies, and he would have what they call a conga line. They used to call it rumba back then. Dizzy Gillespie did things with a Cuban artist by the name of Chano Pozo. He was a percussionist from Cuba. He was black, and he was, once again, a composer, songwriter, no education. This was all virtuoso type of individuals that had mastered an instrument without even knowing how to read, you know, musical notes. They felt the music and played it as they felt it and created it. And it's an honor to be with you. We started doing this during Hispanic Heritage Month in 2021, and we did it again in 2022. And in 2021, we spoke about black artists in the Latin music industry. And those artists were, they were black, but they were Latinos. They were from Cuba, Puerto Rico, Venezuela, Panama, from all parts of Latin America that created a sound, as well as there were white musicians that were in to the Latin scene, so to speak. Count Jader was one of them. Barry Rogers, a trombonist, you know, great trombonist that was playing with Eddie Palmieri. That sound that we got of the 60s, of the Eddie Palmieri, you know, perfecta sound with two trombones, that leading into, you know, Willie Colon with the trombones, and then, you know, expanding with other groups like Ricardo Rey that had like three trumpets and no trombones and so on. And so, you know, tonight, what I want to do tonight is we want to do a few things. We want to thank everyone for tuning in. And this is another opportunity for you to comment on whatever we're playing, ask questions. Beverly has a link that you can send text messages, and you can call in to the talk line, and we're going to have some fun tonight. It's going to be some Latin music with English lyrics.
All right.
Leading up to some pianos that were instrumental in the Latin music industry in New York City and the Bronx. By the time I got to the south of France, we had artists like Pedro Valdez from Cuba, Michel Camilo from the Dominican Republic, and you know, I was working with them. We did a showcase in the south of France during the MIDEM International Music Industry Trade Show that was going on for 55 years when I was working with them. And we also were able to do a show with the Fania All-Stars. And I was working with the owner of Fania Records to put that together. Rest in peace, Jerry Masucci, and Ralph Mercado, rest in peace, who was one of my mentors, and pretty much put all the shows together, finding every promoter in every country, and toured the world.
Okay.
And I was able to work for many years, and when Jerry Masucci were going to do the show in Cannes, France. I was talking to him on the phone one day, and the next day they called me up and told me that he passed away. And so after that, Ralph kind of lost a lot of interest in dealing with a group that he had been promoting in 1995, 96, maybe 97. When he passed, and he lost interest in a group that he had been working with since the 1970s. And the final All-Stars kind of, Johnny Pacheco, rest in peace, he was still the musical director, but he wasn't the same. A lot of the people started to pass away, so. And Ralph passed away in 2009. But, you know, there's just a little taste, a little glimpse of people like Mark Diamond, who was an incredibly talented pianist, composer, songwriter, how he was black and he wasn't really able to break through during that time into the Latin music industry. And he was blackballed and he tragically passed away, you know, from drug abuse. Mm-hmm. During that time in New York, there was a lot of drugs. And so, you know, tonight we're going to talk a little bit about these people. Remember their music lives forever. And some people who are still around that we're going to play tonight. So without any further ado, let's play the next set of some great Latin music in New York City from the South Bronx that was popular with teenagers in junior high school at the time that I was going to junior high school. So take it away.
Okay, now, the number here is 323-642-1586. And I do see a hand raised, but I'm going to play Hong Kong, and then I'll come back to the phone, and then we'll play our set here. Okay, here we go.
That was a gentleman that I had the honor to work with until, you know, his passing. I was working with him during that time that he passed away, the great late Tito Puente, rest in peace. He performed that recording. He produced that recording back in the 60s during the Vietnam War, actually. And I remember my friends were, there were three of us that had older brothers that knew each other and went to school together and played basketball together. And the Hong Kong Rumble, one of the brothers, Paul Navarro's brother, and Eddie Rose's brother, Charlie, they had a night. These guys used to drink Gypsy Rose wine. And then they were going to leave, they went as a buddy kind of system. And both of them left that next day. They went to Paris Island, South Carolina, the Marine Corps boot station, the boot camp, and they went straight to Vietnam after that. And Paul's brother didn't come back, and Eddie Rose's brother came back, but he was never the same. And then my brother was there. Mm-hmm. My brother had left before them, and all of them were in Vietnam in the 60s, and they ran into each other. Carmelo, which was Paul's brother, Charlie, which was Eddie's brother, and my brother Mike, all of them, okay. Rest in peace. They were our heroes. We all looked up to them, but they came back with the exception, Carmelo, and they were not the same. But very, very much that sentiment of Hong Kong Mambo goes into that era right there. And prior to that, we heard the late, great Hong Kong player, also a composer and a band leader and black Cuban by the name of Mongo Santamaria, with Cal Jader, who was a vibraphonist with the Dave Brubeck Orchestra, and started his own band with some of the best percussionists. That was Afro Blue that we heard at the top of the show, the opening of the show. So, these are, once again, we're just talking about an era in the 60s. We're going to lead up into some other things that happened during the 60s, like the Boogaloo era, and then we'll talk about how that abruptly ended when the Beatles, the British invasion, happened. Because American radio stations used to play Latin tunes, mm-hmm. a lot of them instrumentals. But, I can remember, El Watusi or Mambo Number 5. Those were Latinos, but, they had a bunch of American cats. They put together a song called Tequila. And, that sounded kind of Latin-y. So, they were playing they were playing everything, during those days. It was AM radio. There was no FM. There was not many stations. And then at night, maybe about 9, 10 o'clock at night, actually it was even later than that, at 11 p.m. there was a show. It was a jazz show by a DJ by the name of Symphony Sid. And Symphony Sid was quite a character. He was pretty much in the jazz world. And when Latin music came out, also a Jewish cat, and he gravitated to the Latin musicians, I think some people have souls that just feel the music, and they go after it, and they want to play it, he was a host of a jazz show for many years, and all of us, myself included, a lot of us, at 11 o'clock, we would have our radio on, in our rooms, and obviously listen to Symphony Sid until we fall asleep. We fall asleep to Symphony Sid. I was one of those. And so you know, once again, it's, you know, you have these influences of all these people and how they shaped my musical taste and obviously my style and what I did as a career move. And one of the things that was so interesting is that during all those years that I've been working in Latin music industry, I'm still involved today.
Mm-hmm.
I've never felt like I was working. You know, I was always doing something I loved, and I loved getting paid for it, obviously. So, but it wasn't anything like, oh, I got to go to work. You know, I never, you know, my hours are up. I got to go. You know, if it took 10 hours, 12 hours, 16 or whatever it was, the recording, the touring, the whatever it was, you would do it, get your rest, and go back and do it, you know, do what you had to do again just to reach a goal, whether it was promoting an artist or promoting a song or promoting an event or, you know, working with a record label that they need help to get the artist out there. But I never felt that was working. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
During my career. So
mm-hmm.
That's pretty much where I'm at today. Yeah.
Well, we're listening to CEO Eddie Rodriguez of Eddie Rodriguez Entertainment. He is a artist manager. He's a books artist. He is a music consultant. And he is bringing us the music from a South Bronx to South of France tale. We haven't got to the South of France yet, but we're getting there. And so I do have a hand raised. Let's see. 706-202.
Hotep and better love, Sister Bev.
Hotep,
and,
Mommy.
Yeah. And good evening to your excellent guest who's giving us a historical view. But I'm really challenged because I've always looked at the thing and saying that it's called Latin music, and the artists are either Spanish, Portuguese, Cuban, but they speak Spanish. And the thing is that how is it that Latin is Italian? Tino was a name that was given in the 60s or earlier because they had a big controversy about Latin music because they categorized during the Grammys, I think in the 70s or somewhere, that they put everybody together, Latin pop, Latin jazz, all of it was under one genre, and they didn't split it like they do all the other, R&B, soul, all of that. Until they had a big controversy about it, and then they began to split it up. But the thing that even look at music that comes out of Spain and Portugal is looked at, even the language is Spanish or Portuguese, it's still labeled by America as Latin or Latino, which is culturally, you know, a name in which they, why isn't it the Spanish or the Cuban sound or the Portuguese or the Brazilian music. It don't identify the people from the land
that's a good question. That's a very
right, and this is what I'm sharing, and the thing that we're looking at is because you got to define the culture. There is no Latino land. There's Cuba, there's Puerto Rico, there's Mexico, there's Spain and Portugal. The thing that they're doing is that they take and relabel and define the cultural art to their liking and give it their label for it when it's actually the cultures. Those ones that in Cuba and the tropics, Puerto Rico, all of that was creative music that came from the people. And how do you give them not the honor of naming it after who the people are, but giving your label because you want to control the industry of it?
I agree with you 100%. We, growing up in New York City, in the Bronx, didn't even want us to talk Spanish in the schools, okay? The Bronx was mostly Jewish in the 50s, and then it turned to black. I grew up in a Puerto Rican and black neighborhood. All the schools I went to from elementary, junior high school, and high school, it was always a black and Puerto Rican student body, so to speak. And so the Latin thing, I think it would be like a black thing. And for black music came out, they used to just call it soul music. Or before that, they used to call it roots music. I think what we have to understand is that we're dealing with investments, and people create things that, like you said, they really don't have anything to do with the culture. It becomes something of, we do the American thing, and then we do the Latino version. And that kind of stuck. I remember having a conversation with the president of the old magazine called Cashbox in the 80s. In Los Angeles, and we got into conversation that you're talking about. He said, because that's what everybody called it. And so until the 70s, when salsa was created, boogaloo was before that, and the mambo and the cha-cha was before that. The recognition and the Grammys for Latinos didn't really happen until Iraquere from Cuba won a Grammy. They only had one Grammy Awards. Now they have two. I have the Grammy Awards they want to see in January. And coming up in November is the Latin Music Awards. And they have all types of categories there for what you're talking about, urban, pop, But they still call it Latin, best contemporary,
right.
Latin pop, And it's just, I don't know, it's an industry thing. It should be more of a into the culture. However, all the music we're hearing tonight, somebody had to pay for it. Somebody had to pay for that recording session in the studio, the musicians, the distribution, the marketing, and they weren't Puerto Ricans. And they weren't black.
No,
these are the people that were making those decisions, and also allowed unethical practices to happen. Not giving artists their rights to their music by buying them out, so they could take the publishing, the songwriter, and the composer royalties. From BMI and ASCAP or whatever performing rights society they were with, and radio wasn't that big back then. There were no Latin and Spanish radio played Spanish music for the older generation, But you're absolutely right, and I think slowly now they still call it Latin urban, Latin contemporary, tropical Latin. Contemporary Latin, and things like that. It kind of stuck in the industry as something, but they do have the Latin Music Awards, the Grammy Latin, they call it LARIS, the Latin American Latin American Recording Arts and Sciences. And so, it's still today, it's gotten bigger calling it Latin, but now we got stuck with it. As long as, I was called all kinds of names, being Latino and being Puerto Rican when I was growing up. And we just had a conversation today, Bentley and I, about a coach that came on the conference, and he said it was the first time since the 1950s that there were no blacks Americans playing in the World Series. And he was doing the same thing that, a lot of people did with black Latinos or blacks from Cuba or from Puerto Rico or from Venezuela, wherever they came from, and not recognizing that these black musicians and singers and talented amazing, God-given, talented individuals in sports and in music have the same skin color. It didn't matter. They were in the South. It didn't matter if you came from Africa or from Georgia or from New York. If you were black, you had to go to the colored water fountain. You had to go to the colored bathroom. You had to go to the colored park to eat. And one song by Joe Kidd, it was called El Pito, and part of the chorus is, I'll never go back to Georgia. So, you know, the black community has gone through the same thing, black roots, black soul, Motown sound. You know, it's gone through from that R&B now, you know, urban, pop, obviously, and rap and hip-hop, you know, so. You know, I think it's just kind of something that happens in each generation. So, but you're absolutely right. The only word that came up in the 70s that kind of fit all the music together was a word, you know, salsa.
And right. What is the word?
We didn't care who was on the stage performing, black, white, whatever, or where they came from. We knew that we felt the music.
Right. And there was another word that they used, the label, Ibero, I-B-E-R-O, I think it was American, and that was to categorize any Spanish music or music that came from down in the South and that area. And, you know, it's just like there is no label because when you say jazz, it's only, this is America's classical music, and jazz is identified only by one people. I mean, the creators of jazz was the people of the African descent. And the part for that is that that's America's classical music, just as salsa and all of the different tropical music that came out of the South Americas, the Puerto Rico, and down in there. That is the cultural music of the people. And how do you change and give it another name because it benefits your pocket?
I agree with you. When you say Ibero-America, Ibero-America, that's all, once again, some of the people that were in power that were white and they were from Spain. You know, and you look at Spain, though, you got flamenco, you got the gypsies there. I mean, you know, you got great pop artists, you got great singers, you have, you know, great composers and arrangers and musicians. But I think it's, you know, we have to, once again, just think about the people that were making the decisions to label a certain type of style of music were the people that were creating the funds, or they were investing the funds.
Record labels and the money.
Yeah, record labels and individuals that, you know, to record and manufacture and distribute and market, you know, this music. And it's been tough, you know, but Latin music is still today. And you say jazz, we got Latin jazz today. I mean, I was the head of Poppy Jazz Records out of New York, and we had some great jazz artists that were Latin, but these artists, their arrangements included some Latin percussion. It gave it a different spice. It gave it a different flavor. But as far as they were concerned, they still were able to improvise and have their solos. Something that, you know, jazz musicians had that freedom, you know, to do that. And with Latin, it was all kind of very much, you know, your part, but, you know, you couldn't express yourself. But in Latin jazz, you can. And we have some great, great Latin jazz artists today that toured the world. And even Chick Corea, rest in peace, by the end of his career. He was doing a Latin jazz sets, you know, in all these concerts all over the world.
Santana.
And Carlos Santana, you know, brought that into the rock world. So, you know, every country does have their own genre in Spanish, but I think Latin was kind of easy word and kind of flowed okay rather than saying, Spanish, this or Spanish that or Spanish whatever. If they're English, they call it country, or they call it rock, or they call it doo-wop back then, in Detroit, it was soul music, and that's how we grew up.
Right.
I think it's just a label, yeah.
I want to finish the conversation, but I'm going to go to some music. I want to get some of this music in, and then we'll come back to the conversation. Let's go here.
Adele DeLisi speaking.
Will you accept the collect call from Jack Foley?
Oye, y ese pito.
Hey!
Yes, we're here with Eddie Rodriguez of Eddie Rodriguez Entertainment. And the call-in number is 323-642-1586. If you have a question or a comment for Eddie Rodriguez. Now, who was that we were listening to, Eddie Rodriguez?
We heard the great composer and songwriter at the top of the set was a gentleman, rest in peace, by the name of Willie Fobel, a Puerto Rican, New Yorker, black, and he did some amazing work because the African American community could relate to some of the things that he was talking about because they were right down to the roots. You know, one of his songs that we heard tonight was "Fried Neck Bones, Eggs, and Home Fries," and so you know, the Puerto Rican and the black community in the Bronx and New York City, different parts. I can only talk about the Bronx. But I know that, you know, we lived together. We had friends that we were growing up with that were African-American. And, you know, look at how the name African-American came as African-American today. But it went from this transition from Negro to black to colored, I mean, to blacks and African-American. So, you know, these are the media is a very strong influencer in how people interpret a certain subject or a topic. And Willie Bobo, he was a great timbalero, a percussionist, as well as a band leader. And he was singing and creating songs that related to his identity in New York, being black, Puerto Rican. But being black was being black. So then we heard another gentleman, a Puerto Rican New Yorker, by the name of Joe Cuba. He was the one who was singing. His group was called, well, first, before that, we heard a gentleman by the name of Pete Rodriguez, who was also very influential in bringing in the Boogaloo era. And the Boogaloo, what was the Boogaloo? The Boogaloo was a cha-cha with English lyrics. It came with a dance. The dance wasn't the typical cha-cha. It was called everything from the Shigaling to, you know, it was kind of a takeoff from what was happening in the American market, the way the people were dancing and even the black community as well, you know. You know, with that, you know, going up your hands and your body, you know, moving up and down, and, you know, going along with the music, you know. And so Pete Rodriguez, once again, was, if you remember that song, I Like It Like That, you probably heard it in so many commercials. The songwriter was a gentleman that was in the group by the name of Tony Pavone, who later became one of the record distributors on a very important in a very important area in New York called 10th Avenue, where all the record distributors were. And these distributors didn't take orders from people that were going to, they were going to send things via UPS, or they had routes that people, you know, would go to these people. They had to come to New York to get the new music. And a lot of that music, the LP, not so much, but when we got into the cassettes and when we got into CDs, there was a lot of bootlegging going on. So a distributor would buy a case of 30 CDs, for instance. And they had ways of manufacturing CDs because those CDs were like masters. So they had to produce the artwork, the cover art, put it in a case, you know, and manufacture the CD, and you know, these people would make a lot of money over what they were supposed to make. Nobody used to get compensated, not the artist, not the record label, etc. And we wrapped it up with another song that was very interesting. A gentleman who, Pete Rodriguez, was Puerto Rican, white, light skin. And then we ended it up that set with Joe Cuba singing, you know, El Pito. And one of his, the chorus was, obviously, I'll never go back to Georgia. And once again, you know, it didn't matter what country you came from. It, you know, these people would travel the South just like athletes, and they weren't able, although they were talented, they weren't able to be treated like, you know, the other citizens or the peoples of those towns. They were separated, their segregation, and it was strong. So, and the music as a result during that time was that these groups didn't penetrate as far as they could. But Joe Cuba did. He penetrated all the way to the West Coast with another song called Bang Bang. I'll be very simple lyrics. Once again, that Boogaloo era was alive and well at that time. And, you know, so Joe Cuba, these guys, once again, you know, calling it Latin was just a label. It had nothing to do with the language of the Latin language, which is a language that I used to hear when I used to go to Catholic church in the 50s and 60s. They were still saying masses in Latin. And it wasn't until after that they started doing masses in English and in Spanish, et cetera. So I believe that, yes, it's very easy to get caught up into a particular identification of music for commercial purposes. And I think that's where that Latin thing came from. Our guest, Colin, our guest, was absolutely so 100% right. You know, these were so very talented people that it didn't matter where they came from. They mostly came from Spanish-speaking countries. And their rhythms were African-based rhythms with drums. And the singing was, like what we just heard, was contemporary of that time. And but prior to that, you know, all the music that we heard from Puerto Rico or from Cuba or from Venezuela or wherever, you know, it was in Spanish. But the industry that was created was the Latin music industry, a multi-billion-dollar industry today. And it's still called the Latin music industry. Salsa was a genre that was created, a danceable genre that was more accepted by the teenage population of New York City that liked to dance, you know, dance with a partner, and, you know, certain steps that you had to know so you didn't trip over your feet, you know. And
is this still popular Latin today?
And, you know, the Palladium days, they used to call it Latin. That's that. Cha-cha and mambo, they called it Latin. Mm-hmm.
Eddie Rodriguez, is salsa still popular today?
Salsa has existed or coexisted with every new Latin genre created for the youth of the day. Right now we have an artist from Puerto Rico. His name is Bad Bunny. A lot of people never heard of him. He's a Latin trap artist. What he did was he took that trap that was being was created in Atlanta and talked about different life situations of that, you know, that particular, you know, population, the producers and the singers and the artists were, you know, relating to trap. And that was kind of something that came after hip-hop, you know. Then you had trap and hip-hop. They created a movement in Puerto Rico, hip-hop in Spanish. They called it reggaeton. You know, you had a Latin beat, you had a DJ, a lot of dancers. You had one singer, two singers, and maybe a duo. And it was rap music in Spanish because the youth didn't want to relate or they couldn't relate in Puerto Rico to their parents' music, you know. And at that time, a lot of the, most of the biggest stars in salsa music came out of Puerto Rico, and they still do. And Bad Bunny's a trap urban artist, but they put him in the Latin urban category. He has, if you go to Spotify, you'll have, you know, monthly listeners, you know, 40, 50 million, 60 million. They'll come out with a, announce a tour, world tour, sold out in 2 hours. He's so creative, you know. And so artists like that come out every 10, 15, sometimes 20 years. So it's Latin urban. It's just different. It's a rub-a-dub booty dance. A boy and a girl, that's all. They're not dancing in front. We used to have slow dancing back in the day.
Right.
You know, these are two, the person, you're hugging, you're dancing, and, you know, it's like a love day. But now it's like 100 miles per hour, you know, and it's not, you're not looking at your partner. Your partner, and you're behind the partner, and you, the male has one part, the female has another part. So that's popular today, and we can't stop that. But salsa music is taught at, well, I don't think Alvin Murray or dance studios are around today, but if you go to any local thing in Detroit and ask, do you have salsa lessons, salsa dance lessons in your studio, dance studio, to learn how to dance? They'll probably tell you yes. And Zumba had a lot to do. They were playing all Latin music to exercise them. So what we have today is we had that one era of Boogaloo, but I think now we're gonna hear some more great music of that time, and I hope the audience enjoys what they're listening to. We have some fluttering, I think, in the delivery of the content. It kind of speeds up and goes back to normal. So I want to tell everyone that after the show, if you go to the link, you will hear the music perfectly. It won't have any fluttering like I'm hearing on my side. I'm coming to you live from Arroyo, Puerto Rico, where Samuel Morse tested his telegraph back in the 1850s. And that was in Detroit.
We're live. Speaking of Puerto Rico, how are y'all doing over there from the hurricane?
Well, thank you for asking. The hurricane came, and they're trying to help people. And, you know, now we're seeing that this administration is treating this disaster a lot differently than the Humber administration that came and see paper towels to people as if that was a sign of helping them. And no FEMA around. I was here during that time, and I was 40 days without electricity or water. And it was a cash economy. And everything took a long time. And if you had a generator, most people have generators when they live in tropical islands. But a lot of people don't. And, you know, my family didn't have one at the time. But just this last one, Hurricane Fiona, seemed to be a little bit more, they treated people like a little bit more humane, so to speak. And now we're expecting another storm front to come in this week. So we'll see what happens with that.
Another one?
The electrical. We have another one coming up. So we'll see what happens with that. But right now, it's fine. Beautiful night. It's in the 70s, and clear skies, and we'll see how that is tomorrow. But yes, things are moving right along as normal.
Okay. Kwame, did you have any questions or comments before we go to our next set? Okay.
No, he's giving.
Okay.
No, so you could go ahead and play the next.
All right. Where am I at here? I'm going to, here I go. Mm-hmm. Rodriguez with us, and he's with Eddie Rodriguez Entertainment. He's been in the music industry for over 30 years. And if you have any questions or comment, you can call 323-642-1586. Push the number one, and I'll see your hands raised. Now, what, and we're listening to what the music industry is called Latin music. What era was this in that we're listening to? Is this the 70s or 80s?
No, Beverly, this is the 60s.
Oh, this is the 60s.
We're getting it. This is the 60s. This is, you know, don't forget, this is, once again, you know, call Latin music at the time. And that's how they used to call dancing to mambo. Mambo was big in New York during the 50s, rumba in Hollywood in the 40s. The Marx Brothers made that rumba, the conga line. They featured the conga line in their movies. And so, you know, that was a Latin thing, and I had heard once again that, you know, they used to do movies back then that they would do parts, and you know, they had a Spanish, an English part, you know, and film in English, and they would do the entire film with Spanish actors. The same thing, you know, there was a Latino thing. That's what these executives called it, and you know, so when we say Latino, you know, that was, you know, now they say Hispanic American.
African Americans. A group of people, a population that is different from the mainstream population of America at the time, you know, Italian. They didn't make it in the music industry big. They had a few artists, you know, Frank Sinatra, big with the Italian community. He came from Hoboken. Every era has their own name and to identify a specific style of music. And it happens with every genre that you will pick up, with rock, with Latin rock, with jazz, with Latin jazz, with salsa. With salsa, it's just salsa. And mambo and cha-cha, once again, the beats that we hear, the cowbell, the Latin percussion, the rhythm section, the piano, the bass, the singing style, it's all to a cha-cha beat, but it's in English, and it was called Boogaloo. That was the Boogaloo era. And in one tune we heard, the first tune we heard was by Joe Buchan. That was a very interesting tune. That tune was composed and written by Curtis Mayfield.
Yeah.
Gypsy Woman.
Right.
And he took that song and gave it a Latin beat. And that was off Joe Buchan worldwide. I was mentioned Trumpet Man by a great pianist, Puerto Rican pianist and Puerto Rican singer, Rich Ray and Bobby Cruz. Bobby Cruz didn't know. That was what was happening in the Boogaloo era. And he checked on this.
Your tone is getting muffled.
After that.
You kind of muffled a little bit.
Okay. How about now?
That's better.
Beverly?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can hear you great. Yeah, you sound just fine. Once again, our audience should know that I'm working for my iPhone and some AirPods tonight, and you're working for your computer and your
You have Puerto Rico too, so that has a lot to do with it too.
Right. So, but the last piece that we heard was by Johnny Colon. Once again, another big influence during that Boogaloo era. That song, as a matter of fact, was called the Boogaloo Blues. And when he says LSD has a hold on me, remember the 60s, the LSD was a big thing, but he said LSD, L stands for love, S stands for strong, and D stands for divine. He was talking about a girl. But once again, in English to us, it sounded like he was talking to us because the teenagers weren't speaking Spanish. Our parents spoke Spanish. A lot of Puerto Rican teenagers. Were first generation. They were born in New York after their parents were born in Puerto Rico. Second generation. I was born in Puerto Rico, and my brother. So my children are first generation Puerto Rican. But, once again, it's a style that's picked up by every generation, picks up their own style of Latin. My kids love, Latin urban, Latin trap, Latin reggaeton. Tropical music to them is that music. It's not dance music like I do. But once again, salsa music or Latin music, the Latin music industry has coexisted with the general market, since the 50s up until today.
All right.
Could I ask a question?
Yes.
Okay. And, you've got extensive knowledge on Latin music. I'm trying to see, because he's never been classified as a Latin musician, but Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass.
Herb Albert was Jewish, as a matter of fact. But, you know, they had a record label called A&M Records out in California. When I first went to California as a teenager, you know, I went to junior high school. To high school there for one semester, my 10th grade. You know, everybody thought I was Mexican. And I said, no, I'm not Mexican. I'm Puerto Rican. You know, but you can convince anybody else or anything else but Mexican. You know, I didn't even say Mexican-American back then. They used to call everybody who was Mexican a wetback, you know? And so, you know, every part of the country has a different type of taste on people. Puerto Ricans, you know, on one side they would call them a different thing, you know, like a derogatory name. And as well as blacks, you know, as well as Italians, and, you know, all these populations, there's always negative people. You know, we like to think that people would get into music and be on a frequency of love and feeling the music of movement, of you know, thinking of it from a frequency that's in the invisible that is allows you to feel something that is pleasurable, whether you tap your feet or you move your fingers or you get up and know how to dance. You dance. So that's how I interpret, you know, the feeling of Latin music to me, and the salsa music or Latin music or Latin jazz to me. You know, we have Latin rock. I'm not into that. I didn't grow up with that. The people in Argentina grew up with that. I'm not into the reggaeton. I didn't grow up with that. I've done concerts, reggaeton concerts at Madison Square Garden, sold out. Conscious, but never wanted to get into that industry, you know. And people say, why? I said, well, you know, it didn't move me the way, you know, the way that tropical salsa music or what we call Latin music, and they call that Latin music too, but it's not, you know, it doesn't do the same thing, even though I like it. It doesn't do the same thing to me as like enjoying a great performance by a Latin jazz artist and the Herb Albert, if you want to brass, was once again, you know, it was that time, you know, where even the Beatles thought the Americans were going Latin. You know, they had an American radio station. They had these Latin songs like the Kilo or the Tijuana Brass or Perez Prado with Mambo No. 5 or Patricia. You know, so they thought that the Beatles came in and squashed all of that. and then we went into that, you know, four-piece group. Now, we were talking about these bands. There would be 21-piece orchestras, Latin bands, orchestras of that time. They used to call them Afro-Cuban bands, you know. They didn't call the industry the Afro-Cuban industry. But, you know, these people mostly, the very talented ones were black, and they went through the same thing as any black person in America would go through. And they couldn't go to certain places, even in New York City. They couldn't buy certain apartments or rent apartments in certain areas, which just weren't allowed. You know, they had a lot of gangs. Those gangs didn't let people move in there, or they make their life miserable. But today we have a great opportunity to embrace music from far away and share it with a lot of people, and that's what I hope happens with this project that we're doing with Beverly. And I think that she's the one that has to answer the question now. How do you feel about this music we're listening to tonight?
Oh, I'm very much into it because Mongo Santa Maria, you know, Carlos Santana, Tijuana Brass, these were artists that I grew up in the era that I came in, you know, from the 50s, 60s, and on up. And so being able to hear this and a mixture with soul and this music combining, that's why I was asking the question, because you go pick up the album and there's a black man on here with congas, you know, Mongo, and then you calling it Latin, but, you know, he's a brother, and you're looking at it just like when I visited Puerto Rico. The part that got me was that
there in the main city were mostly the lighter Puerto Ricans, but when you go out into the country, you see the difference, the darker people that live there in the mountain area and in those areas. And it was just the thing that I was looking at, because when you visit certain areas, you find that they'll put a caste system. They put the lighter people into the tourist areas and all of that. But then when you go into the country, you see the culture and the darkness of the people, you know, because the Titinos and the African are the combination that created what they call Puerto Ricans and the Spanish, that mixture. Right. And so when we see, just like here, the miscegenation and the thing that went on here, the lighter against the darker, and this is in all of the conquered lands, you see this culture difference in our own people. And this is the part where I was looking at, because it's calling it Latino and saying Latin, because Latin is Italian, you know, but coming under Catholicism, they had to speak that, as far as learning the Catholic teachings. So these are just certain parts of missing pages of history that we don't identify, because, you know, there's a great culture in the drum. The conga was created by the African drum in Cuba, and the whole thing, and you follow in the history of the cultures and the instruments that were used to create this whole new genre of music from the culture of the people, you know. And when you're talking about salsa, that's a combination of an African dance and a native dance, and the way that they interacted and danced. So it's chasing or rediscovering our story is in the music.
I agree 100%. I agree 100%. And I want to thank you for calling in and making this show lively. This is the first time we have someone that we can interact with and have your point of view of this topic. And we really appreciate it. What city are you calling from?
I'm in the place that they'd never go back to, Georgia. I'm in Georgia. I'm in the stolen land of the Muskogee Creek here in Eatonton, Georgia. I live in the area that Alice Walker, the famous writer who wrote Color Purple, she was born here, and about 30 miles from where the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was born at, in Sandersville. So there's a lot of historical history in this area, but you know, we look at what are you talking about, the racism, the color, and the black, you know, that's part of the culture, you know.
Well, I think that you know, to the investors, which whoever they were, whatever race, you know, obviously were white, they were businessmen. You know, they said, well, Latin, they have that in the church. The Latin, Spanish is all the same thing. Found it a little bit more sexier than Spanish, and it stuck many years. It's still that word is still around today. Latin music is sung in Spanish, but they don't call it Spanish music; they call it Latin music, and
right.
Different styles, different genres. So you know, we're kind of stuck with that right now. But the creation of Juan Pool in Cuba, and creation, which is more African-oriented in drumming, and with rhythms, you know, that were created in Cuba with guitars and with maracas, and, you know, with bongos and timbales, and mostly guitars at that time, guaguancó, and singers talking, you know, telling their stories. And then in Puerto Rico, we had the bombi plena, African-based types of rhythms. Only black people used to, you know, they knew those rhythms, how to play them, how to perform them. And those two things, guaguancó, some montuno, some people as well, and the bombi plena from Puerto Rico was what created the commercial sound that what we went through right now with some of the artists that are singing English. But, you know, once again, the roots go back to Spanish, you know, speaking, Spanish language speaking, or singers. And they were telling their stories in Spanish. I think it's the, a question that I think we'll have to work on a little bit more as an advocate of
right,
showing, you know, where the music comes from. But it comes from Cuba. This original Latin mambo and cha-cha and all that salsa came from Cuba. No one
right
can deny that. Yeah. And the Cubans, the rhythm, the beats, all those beats are from Africa. And, yeah, we have a thriving Latin music industry today, a billion-dollar industry. So
right, but you can't leave out the Tinos, because the Tino had a culture. And they are in Puerto Rico and in the islands and Cuba. Those indigenous people before the invasion had their cultural music. And it was just the mixing of the two cultures that created what we listen to today.
Hello.
Yes, absolutely. I agree 100%. And what we're going to hear now is some salsa from the early 70s, where this music went from the boogaloo to salsa before it was called salsa.
All right. And it's these two songs that we plan is going to take us out of here. This is, and so I want to say my thank yous right now. And who are these? Tell us, Eddie Rodriguez, the artists of these two songs that's going to take us out of here now. L. Ratton.
This is an artist by the
name. Go ahead.
L. Ratton. Ratton, that was another Joe Cuba. But you have another two songs after that by a black Cuban pianist by the name of Mark Diamond, the fifth of Beethoven. Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, and he took that and made it into a salsa song. And then he had another song with that after that called El Barrio, and that was kind of a story about, once again, you know, Spanish Harlem. They used to call it El Barrio in New York City, which is two singers, two different singers. One is, the first one is Frankie Dante, may he rest in peace, and the second one is Angel Canales, may he rest. Actually, Frankie Dante was from the Dominican Republic, and Angel Canales was from Puerto Rico. So we'll listen to that. And thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back next week. Truth to Power.
All righty. Okay. Life. Better love. Thanks, everyone, for listening tonight. And I'll be back Monday. Better love.
Mi gato se está quejando. Que no puede vacilar, si donde quiera que se mete, su gata lo va a buscar. De noche brinca la verja, que está detrás de mi casa, a ver si puede fugar. olvidarse sin que ella lo pueda ver. Y no tan pronto está de fiesta. Silvestre felino tiene que echar a correr. Esto sí es serio, mi amigo. Oye, qué lío se va a formar cuando mi gatito sepa. Y es tan simple la razón. El que a su gata le cuenta, no es nada más que un ratón, un ratón. Camina,
de corazón.